I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. Thanks so much for checking out Web Friends, this brand new podcast. So you're about to listen to the pilot episode. It was recorded back in January. I had a chance to sit down with Jamie Newberry, and we chatted a little bit in her home office. But before we jump into the episode, I want to give you a little bit of background on Jamie. I met her a few years ago through the local design community here in Las Vegas. And at the time, she was working remotely here in Vegas for an agency out of Seattle called Black Pixel. And they're a cool shop on top of the normal agency work that they do. They've also created some really beautiful Mac desktop applications that you might have seen or even used, like Kaleidoscope and Versions. And before she was at Black Pixel, she helped create some of the initial mobile work for Zappos.com here in Vegas. But right now, she's working for herself. And in fact, you'll hear us mention it in the interview. She is a design coach and a consultant. Part of what she does is she comes in to a company, and she takes her years of experience as a designer to kind of help teams, design teams, better communicate what they need and work better with their managers or with the rest of the company. And she also helps train management in the company on the design process and how that can be better utilized to help the company kind of go in the direction that they want it to. So on top of that coaching and consulting, she's also an awesome speaker. In fact, in July, she's going to be speaking at an event apart in Washington, D.C. So if you're looking to go to an event apart, I would recommend going to that one this year. And she's also written some great articles. She wrote one for Pearson IT Certification. She wrote one called Designing My Life, How I Used Principles of Experience Design to Reshape My Life and Reach for the Stars. And we mentioned that in the episode coming up. But I recommend you taking the time to actually go through and read that. It's a wonderful article. So I'll make sure that there's a link in the show's notes. So now that you know Jamie, let's go ahead and jump into the interview. Okay, Jamie. So two questions. We'll start with the first one.
All right.
What advice or examples have you received from people that you've worked with or friends? Or web friends. That's the whole point of the show.
Web friends. Well, you know, one of the most, I guess, like the most immediate one that comes to mind, sort of the freshest in my mind, from a former colleague and still friend. So while I was working at Black Pixel, actually, I worked with a biz dev guy named Stefan Scheer. And, you know, over time, like, he left. And then a while later, I was thinking about leaving and I'm really kind of going through a lot of stuff. In my own life, career-wise, and just kind of sorting through things.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with him, and he's just wise on all levels, like wise, super friendly, wise. And he says, well, I say to him, I say, you know, I'm trying to really figure out what's next. And he said to me, he said, it's not about what's next. It's about what's important. And he kind of just said it in the middle of a sentence. He didn't say it all set out like that, like I, you know, kind of extracted it and made it this thing. But he, you know, he said it kind of just a part of the rest of the paragraph he was talking about and about making, you know, it is about what's important and really prioritizing things that way. But I just stuck, like my mind stuck on that little piece. What's important? Oh my gosh. It was, yeah.
Yeah. So how have you taking that advice, how do you go about figuring out what is important for you? Like, what was your process? It's not like,
yeah,
as soon as you heard that advice, the light came on and you knew exactly what you had to do next, right?
Well, interestingly, and that's kind of the next thing that happens, right? It's like, how do I do that? Like, you start sorting it out for yourself. And for me, I mean, a big part of it, like, oh my God, what's next? I hit like this burnout point where I was just like, I don't know if I enjoy what I'm doing anymore. And in a 17-year design career, that's a really scary feeling to have because that's all I've ever known is being a designer in some capacity or another. And so I was terrified because as I was sorting through what was important, and I'll get to kind of the process I arrived at for that, I really was trying to figure out like, oh my gosh, I don't know if being a designer is in the top 10 even, you know? And, but I started thinking about like, how do I figure out what is important and use the skills that I have to actually support those things. And in doing that, I arrived at designing my life, interestingly.
Yeah, so that's a fantastic article. You wrote it for Pearson?
Yeah, for Pearson Publishing. They were doing a thing for women in tech and asked me to write a thing. And I guess in interviewing me about what I would write about, I had made that comment. And the designing your life was actually, I have a friend who's a life coach.
Right.
And she had made the comment. She goes, well, it sounds like you're just designing your life. And so I kind of, you know, Stephanie is her name. And she was the one who gave me that term.
Okay.
And so.
So did you like make a persona of yourself? And so.
Yeah. You know, what I did is in kind of the same way I approach a project in a lot of ways. I mean, every project has sort of its unique
right.
project flow.
Right.
But I broke it down into like, you know, here, what's important to me? I made a little list. And then I from that list, I said, what skills do I have that would actually support me doing these things? You know, I'm a designer. I work from home. I know how to write. Ooh, I like writing. And I just kind of elaborated on some of those things. And it kind of filtered out that writing is an area I really wanted to focus on. I was already doing a lot of speaking, public speaking and stuff for the last couple years. And writing is something I've loved for a very long time. And I write a lot. I just don't write and post it in public places. I don't write things for people to read necessarily. Mm. But getting through that fear has been a part of the what's important. It's important for me to get stuff out there now and stop being so afraid of letting people read what's happening inside my brain.
So are you planning on releasing some of those writings, or is most of your inspiration or things that you want to write at this point to publish new?
I would say most of the stuff I want to write at this point is it's all new stuff. It's stuff I'm working through now.
Okay.
And I always have some, and I don't mean to be like full of myself way, but like I always hope that what I'm going through now will somehow help somebody somewhere in some small way.
Yeah.
So that's really, I'm starting to write what I'm working through, because I'm working through a lot of big life stuff right now.
Yeah.
And, have been for the last few years in particular. I mean, I think we're always iterating, whether it's a product or whether it's life. That's kind of my 2014 talk circuit will be a work in progress. So
that's awesome. So, and now you've been on your own. It's not really on your own, but you've been consulting for over a year now.
Well, you know, I guess this time, yes.
Okay.
This time, yes. So, I mean, just to shed a little more light on that, I have almost always in my work history, like since the time I graduated college, have almost always done freelance work in parallel to a full-time job.
Okay.
So, and that used, way back in the day, I used to freelance web designs. I design and code the websites, way back in.
Yeah.
Eventually I joined forces with a company. It was a local to Las Vegas company at the time called Eat Drink, which I became a partner of, after being there for a couple of years. And then we ended up, that was a fun, super awesome company.
And you still work with some of those people when
I
you
do.
Can, right?
I still work with quite a few of those people. And I do still keep in touch with anyone I don't work with. Like, that was such a tight-knit group. All fantastic people. Everybody has gone on to do some fantastic stuff since we closed the doors in 2009. So, yeah.
We've had conversations about that. Like, do you ever feel like that was, like, that seems like the dream, right? To work with friends that you can respect and trust, and like you just find a groove.
You do. You know, it's funny. It's a conversation. It's got to be quite literally the sixth time it's come up in the last 10 days. Hmm. But like, do you,
the universe is telling you something.
I know, right? Is it who you work with or what you work on?
Because
I've had a lot of people who, I love the people I work with. I hate the projects. And just in a conversation with Craig Hockenberry yesterday, a couple days ago, he was saying, I think you can separate the two. I don't think you can separate the two. It's what you work on and who you work with. But I do place a lot of value in the who you work with.
Yeah.
Because I could work on almost anything, I think. If you enjoy the people you're working with.
Well, Well, it has to be both, right? Because there's a certain amount, like if you are in a place where you work with awesome people, but your projects are terrible, we don't always appreciate what we have, but we're really good at noticing what we're not happy with.
You know, it's funny. It's just like design. I mean, it's so easy to point out what's wrong. That's the first thing people do.
Right.
It's the easiest thing to do. It's not always easy to remember what's good.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. So this is great stuff. So this time, separating yourself from full-time work, continuing freelance, but more of a consulting role that you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's part of the designing your life is that you've shifted the way that you design. You're not doing, let me put together a WordPress site for you.
Right.
Like what sort of things are your ideal projects? Because freelance, you do what you need to for the right sort of people. But what's your ideal project?
Well, so the things I've been working on since I left Black Pixel last April has been a lot more, human work on. I work on humans. No, I don't mean it like that.
Amateur doctor.
Like, doctor without a license. No.
Nice.
No, but it's more about, so I've been an experience designer, right? User experience design. And that's so much about putting the human element into a project. And, you know, after you do that for a while, it's still, at the end of the day, it's a product. It's being, you know, sort of driven by business. And when you really, really take away all of these layers of stuff that you get frustrated with, whether you're working with every designer has, you know, client horror stories, and everybody who does work with clients has stories, right?
Right.
Frustrations and stuff like that. And I just get really tired of talking about those stories. Like, I don't want to talk about people and negative things and kind of keep dwelling on those. Like, I want to keep talking about ideas and how to make things better. And, in kind of peeling away all this stuff, right? What's important is actually the humans who make these products and the health and well-being and mindset and happiness and struggle and goals of all the people who are making these products. So my focus has kind of shifted toward helping the people that make the products. So I still have, you know, a creative background. There's still a lot of user experience expertise, I guess, like behind me, but helping apply a lot of those principles to the individuals. And then, you know, in a way we're taking the humans that create the products for the humans that use the products. In a way, we're connecting human beings now. The product is a mechanism that connects the human beings, but whatever that product is. But I want to really, really work on the human beings on both sides of the spectrum.
Okay.
And that's kind of been my focus. So I've been, you know, doing a little bit of consulting, you know,
What does that look like?
Yeah.
What is that like in the trenches type of stuff? Are you bringing in users and helping these designers to do better interviews? Like what?
It's actually a little bit more of, so the really specific projects, and I can't really talk about clients per se or people, individuals, but examples, like tangible examples of some stuff I've done. You go into a large corporation that has a creative team, and the creative teams in large corporations often have high turnover.
Yes.
Because they're not very happy.
Yes.
Because often corporations don't know how to nourish creative folks. We're a different breed. And I get that. You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes very difficult to perceived as difficult to manage, perceived as emotionally exhausting, perceived as, you know, whatever, volatile. And so, I don't know, working with creatives, like, you know, being a partner at Eat Drink, for instance, I was sort of the mom of the company in a lot of ways. Like, maybe that's it. I'm like a mom for hire, right? No, it's bringing that. So I go into companies, I help them on the management side, help managers understand how to help creative people, but then also help the creatives learn how to communicate better with their management teams.
Okay.
How to communicate, because if they don't know something, we often, as creatives, and I've seen this 1,000 times, we sort of pen up our frustrations and we vent them to all our colleagues, but never talk to our higher ups, so to speak, or we complain in ways that are non-productive.
and we're bad at giving bad news. Like, I found, like, when even a higher up says, hey, is everything all right? I was wondering if there's anything we... They're like, no, we're fine.
Yep.
Good.
And
don't fire me, please.
Yeah. You know, and that's, it's about learning how to communicate better. It's learning how to understand how what we do is usually to support a business need or a communication need. And, you know, in those big companies, there's so much communication breakdown, and 9.9 times out of 10, it's all about communication. My projects have been about improving that communication in a lot of ways. So
very cool.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of presentations as well, but they're smaller groups. You're not like,
usually it's not a lot of, like, I don't put together a lot of presentations. I mean,
is it discussions?
It's a lot of one-on-one stuff. And then a lot of when it gets into group stuff, sometimes it's skill building stuff. Like, you know, here's sort of a project that I had last year that, first I was approached, we want to hire you. We need a rock star, blah, 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 you know, and I'm not interested in going full time, but here's what I can do. I can do workshops to help build the team that you have.
Yeah.
And what I found was that was really a much better path to take than bringing in a rock star, because, and I've seen this time and time again too, right? In these companies, like, we have to hire a rock star. They bring in a rock star. Rock star thinks, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to just do what I'm good at and going to nourish the team and get, you know, rally support. And, but they come in and then there's this sort of territorialism by the team that existed. They feel a bit of a morale blow because they weren't asked or weren't believed in to do whatever this rock star was brought in to do.
Yes.
So morale damage has been created. And so I come in and try to help repair some of the morale damage. And that's been I enjoy this work a lot because it is salvageable in most instances. And you know pretty quickly if you walk into a situation that is not salvageable, if a designer is too far, 2 feet out the door, but still kind of hanging on for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's like you arrive at, like, are we... And I hate to say counseling because I'm not a counselor per se. I'm still a designer, but I've managed a lot of folks, a lot of different personalities. And it's like, are we counseling to save the relationship or to end the relationship? And really determining that can save everybody a lot of time and money and emotional exhaustion. So, yeah.
So in the contract with, and again, don't get into specifics, but like if a corporation or a company or a group, whatever, contacts you and says, hey, we want you, how do they define or quantify what they're... Because the creatives would be fine with, hey, we want Jamie to come hang out with us and to give us some advice and to do some leading. But I know that some uppers would be like, all right, X number of hours. She's going to be in this room for this amount of time. Yeah, how do you help facilitate that communication?
So it usually starts really early on in the scope, and the scoping takes, it's a few back and forths. The scoping effort has probably, you know, my time in putting into, like, the time I put into scoping has increased a little bit, but it's been, the payoff is so much greater.
Right.
And so that's great. And so what I'm doing is usually in every instance, it's been, they're approaching me because they want to hire me or recruit me or whatever.
Right.
And I have been able to kind of flip that around.
So you're using LinkedIn.
Oh my gosh, LinkedIn. It's like, I don't do that, but I do this. And so, you know, one, it was like, we want to hire a rock star. And so we need somebody to do this. And I said, well, what I can do is I actually have some workshops that I can do. And, you know, just being an experienced designer, when you kick off a project, you go through certain little workshops. And so I kind of have these little workshops, almost like little workshop packages.
Yeah.
And they get refined over time. And I've done talks. I used to do super rad brainstorming talk. And we actually would do that, like, real time. Every time it was different, it was like we would do a real session, 40 people, and it's kind of big and a little haywire, but fun. But these are a little more organized, and so the scope of work comes down to, like, okay, I'm going to do one day of evaluation. We come in, I want to meet with stakeholders in the company.
Yeah.
I want to meet with some of your creative team, the people managing, and a few other folks. And I try to just pack my day full of
meetings,
which sounds horrible to most of us, but it actually, you know, that was my chair. It works out because I'm really, as you would with any project, right? You want to interview your stakeholders and find out what it's the same thing. Only we're talking about people here instead of a product. And so you do the same stuff. You interview your stakeholders and you get to understand what the pain points are, and you so I identify those, and then from there I go back, you know, spend a week, and I put together, here's sort of a prescription.
Right.
Here's what I recommend for your group. If it's one-on-one conversations with creatives, then that's what it is. And it's, you know, whether that's a call once a week to just talk about how they're doing.
So you call once a week. Okay.
I call.
So you doing one-on-ones.
Some, you know, you find some creatives just need a safe space to,
yes,
to talk about something. And then somebody who they can trust to say, here are the problems. Here are the common threads. Here are some suggestions that we can do to change it. Sometimes it's just, you know, their environment is sterile and boring, and creative folks need a little bit more stimulation.
Yes.
And sometimes it's just helping them come up with ways to make their environment more creative. So, like, you know, my little proposal that I come back with, it could be a range of things, whether it's helping individuals on the creative side kind of grow through and work through stuff and communicate better,
mm-hmm,
or if it's helping management individuals. Sometimes it's that, and helping them understand, here are things that, you know, you need to give them some development budget, and, you know, whether it's going on conferences or decorating their space or whatever, we come up with something that's right for, because there's no two situations alike. I've not seen that yet, but.
So how do you do the follow-up then? You make this recommendations and you start, if they agree to the prescription and they start taking their doses, what how do you verify that things are actually, because I mean, it's not like you can enforce anything. You're an outside third party consultant who are just making recommendations, but
well, and it's still, you know, I'm not even a year in on this stuff, and you know, it's maybe I'm going in and causing some crazy tidal waves and I have no idea the outcome yet, but so far,
yeah,
the feedback has been really positive. Like, you know, you made our situation way, way better. In some, things have regressed. In one instance, I've heard that things are exactly like they were before. You know,
okay,
things were good for about 3 or 4 months, and now we need help again or whatever.
Right.
But I've only done 3 of these projects, so just 3 individual.
Well, they're time consuming, right? That's not going to be like, I did this for a week.
It's like, it's like long term. And usually it's like, maybe it's a workshop a week or 2 workshops a month or whatever for a long period of time, 3 months or 6 months. Usually the engagements are like 3 or 6 months. And so, yeah. So that's one thing, you know, that's one thing. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So how do you then fill your needs? You've talked about writing and you've talked about the consulting. What about design? Do you still have the itch to push pixels?
Boy. You know what? I guess the short answer to that is not right now. My 8-year-old is interested in learning Illustrator suddenly. So
she should.
You know, it's awesome. And I used to, you know, I taught graphic design at UNLV, and I taught interface design over there. And so, you know, I have that in me. I can teach her this. But at the same time, I just, when she started, I'm like, watch these videos. Like, watch some tutorials. Like, get to know the space a little bit first, and then we'll talk. Because I don't know, teaching your kid is sometimes way different than teaching strangers.
It's true.
You're less patient. I am less patient at times.
My dad tried to teach me basic. And I had no desire to learn to code. And so I want to find a way to introduce these concepts to my children without
repelling them.
Yes, because he did for a little bit. It wasn't until I decided on my own that I wanted to code. So that's what I need to do. I'm actually thinking the Lego Mindstorms.
Yeah, have you seen RoboBird?
No. Do you have one?
I do. I haven't finished it yet.
Okay.
But I'll show you after our interview or whatever.
I see you got Sphero over there.
Yeah, Sphero's over there. Those are fantastic, too. Those were a gift from my boyfriend's sister.
Okay.
Gifted those to my children for Christmas this year. And they're amazing. I had so much fun. I think I had more fun. But, you know, they're so much fun.
I play with them as soon as they leave.
Yeah, but as soon as they're gone, I get the iPad out and I rack up all these little points. No, Spheros are fantastic. I like those. So, yeah, I want to build little, they said you can build like little houses or things for them, like costumes almost. I want to build costumes for Sphero.
Cosplay Sphero. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sounds fun.
Okay. So.
It is interesting, though. Yeah. Without repelling your kids.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, for me, my dad actually was very anti-creative stuff. I mean, interestingly.
Maybe that might have given you a reason to look into it.
Exactly.
In the first place.
Yep.
I suspect my dad would have been a very creative person. He's not dead. He gotta be careful. He's not past tense. But he would have been a really good designer if that was an option to him. I don't think that was.
Maybe like our parents' generation. I mean, but yeah, my dad was very different, but at the same time, he wanted his kids to, like, he always urged us, all of us. There are three kids in my family. All very inclined toward the arts, right? Yeah. My brother was very musical. I was always in the drawing and painting stuff. And then my sister was always in the theatrics and costume design and stuff like that. And he was always like, be a doctor, be a lawyer, so you have stability and jobs and employment. And you know, he was not a great example of like stability and employment. If he didn't like something, he moved on to something that made him happy. Hmm. And so I love that now. I get it now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just confused. I think mostly.
You're telling me one thing, doing another.
Yep. I don't understand.
Okay. So if you had the opportunity to give advice to all of your friends who are listening, all of them, there's so many. What advice do you wish that you had received from somebody earlier than you figured it out? Like, what are some things that you've kind of hit your head against along the way?
I'm going to say that what's important thing, like, yeah. I really, you know, I've kind of, because of my dad's nature and that, you know, like, I'm going to do what makes me happy. I've always had a little bit of that in me. I think it's because of that. So it relates very much to what's important. If you're not happy doing something, do not waste time, you know, doing something that you're miserable doing.
Right.
Life is too short. I really do, though, I wish that it had hit me the way that it did when Stefan said it last year, you know?
I think there's that line, right? Because you don't want to feel entitled. You don't want to be the, sorry, I don't feel like taking out the trash. I'm not going to do it. Jamie, right. I heard on the podcast that if I don't like it, I shouldn't do it. So I'm not doing my dishes.
No. And, you know, by contrast, hard work, right?
Right.
By contrast, like, I worked my ass off as a, you know, in my 20s, I didn't go tour Europe or anything. I worked like 18-hour days, but I loved it. I loved what I did. I was learning how to, you know, make websites, and I had a full-time job, and then I'd go home and work freelance projects. And I did that for years, and I was also very frugal in, like, I don't know, I'm the last person to know about fashion things and stuff like that. So I was very frugal, and I don't know, I feel like being frugal and stuff like bought me freedom now in life. Like now I have more options because I was a good saver, and I don't know, like now I can take some time off and really focus on, you know, we get in financial binds, fears. I think, you know, if I could help anybody, it's like really learn about your fears so that you can tackle them.
Okay.
Like, if that's kind of, I sound so corny.
Do you head towards your fears, or have you in the past?
That I do. I mean, I'd like to think that I do. I mean, I like to think that I, you know, life gets in disarray sometimes. And
right.
I totally understand that. I've been there, will be there again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, things unravel beyond what you think is your control, but sometimes it's the headspace you're in. I really believe that, like, our minds are ridiculously powerful, and still I'm trying to work through my own fears. Like I constantly, you know, I'm a single mom of two girls, and I have always like security fear. Like, I just quit my job. Oh my God. Things are great for 6 months, but what now? You know, like I have a great situation work-wise right now, from now until June. That contract ends in June. And, you know, sure, it could end at any time, but I'm pretty confident we'll be fine until June. But then what? And when do I start panicking about not having, you know, I don't know. It's really, I don't know that I've actually come to anything conclusive here. But
well, I think what I'm gleaming from it is, yes, do what makes you happy, but it's going to take hard work to get there. I just think of like the instance of your example of going off and starting doing consulting. If you are fresh out of college, you can't be like, I'm going to be a consultant.
Right, right. It takes years of work to get there.
Right. And to become that name that people, and it's not just a name, it's the work that you've put in, that people reach out to you and say, hey, we want you on our team. and the skill that you have to say, yes, you do, but you want me as a consultant.
Yeah.
So that, and then the whole idea of don't let your fear stop or get in the way of those dreams. Like, after you're putting in the hard work, don't stop yourself.
Right. And it is, it's scary. This is the funniest sort of thing, like metaphorically. I don't know if you do any like physical activities or whatever, but like I used to be really, I was a runner and then I got into yoga. And when I got into yoga, like I was never a really acrobatic kid or anything, right? Like yoga has some cool tricks, right?
Yeah.
Like handstands and backbends.
Yeah.
As a kid, I could never do handstands or backbends. Like backbends were completely, cartwheels I couldn't do.
Yeah.
So I was just, I did karate as a kid, but I didn't do like fancy stuff that all the girls could do. I couldn't do those things. Anyway, so when I was like, 28 years old, I started yoga and I learned how to do backbends and handstands. And to me, this was huge. I stopped doing yoga about almost 5 years ago. And I just started again this month. And handstands are back in my life, right?
Yeah.
But I have this sort of interesting fear of kicking up against the wall that I remember going through it the first time I was learning handstands.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. The wall's there. It's not going anywhere. I'm not going to kick through it. And even if I did, big deal. But I'm not kicking that hard. Anyway, you know, it's just, there's the little things like that, right? Like there's something there that I'm trying to work through that's, it's kind of metaphorical for a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And I'm really like, I'm all, oh my gosh, this is great. So I'm trying to work through my little handstands. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? There are bigger barriers I have in my life that are kind of holding me back from whatever's next, right? Like the next level of Jamie, whatever that is. I haven't quite identified, but I've realized that it really is about identifying what you want and not being attached to the path to getting there.
Okay.
The path changes. Like things are going to get in the way and change you, you know, change it up. But
yeah,
just know what you want and be willing to work for it. But don't be so attached to like one direct path of getting there. Like things are going to be flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who once told me, sit down and write your 5-year plan, but know that that's not actually what's going to happen.
Yeah. That's a fantastic. See, I wish I could do something all nice and soundbitey like that. I don't think I possess that skill.
I had the benefit of listening to your description and then having the time to think of
it. There it was. Yeah. You know what? There, that is one thing. Like, that's something my dad taught me as a kid was write things down.
Yeah.
Write down your goals. Write down. And it's something that I've always done. And I really believe in it. And maybe more now than ever. But everything I've ever written down, it's almost like magic. It's so weird.
That it's come to
that
pass.
It's either come to pass or been so scary close that only my fears have stopped it.
That's totally true. All the things that I have hoped for have happened, but they never happen. They never happen as miraculously as you expect them to.
Right, and sometimes it's a non-event, right? Like it's just like, well, here I am.
Well, and it's so much clawing to get to that goal that by the time you got there, it wasn't like an event. It was years.
Right.
And it almost like you can talk yourself out of the majesty of achieving the goal sometimes.
So here's a thing too, that I had kind of in my youth, I'd like made these sort of plans, you know, visions of where I'd be by the time I was 30.
Right.
But I hadn't planned beyond 30. And so when I hit 30,
Think you were going to die? You were like,
I didn't think I was going to, but everything in life, it was almost like, you had this little place setting that you'd been working on, like a plate, a nice little tray.
Right.
And I'd been curating it for years, knowing exactly what it was supposed to look like. And then I hit 30 and I hadn't planned beyond it. So I just had to flip it upside down and dump everything over and then figure out what, you know, okay, I got to figure out what's next now. So if there's any way, even if it changes, if you change it, like I'm really big, you know, we mentioned iteration, right?
Yeah.
We iterate on our projects to make them better. We get user feedback and our life situations, we're the same in our life. We have to kind of constantly reevaluate where we're at because our circumstances change constantly. You know, maybe you didn't have a baby last year or whatever, you know, maybe you had a home and a job and now you don't. We have to like constantly reevaluate our circumstances and adjust for them. But that doesn't mean hold back, if that makes sense. It doesn't mean like, you know, oh, well, I can't do this. I find that I hear that a lot. Like people who I know are capable of a lot hold themselves back with these sort of arbitrary excuses.
Yeah.
Like I can't because, well, You can't because you found a because.
Right.
Like, okay, so what if you remove the because? Then what? Then what's stopping you?
Yeah, friend Seth Chaffee, who's here in town, he was one of my favorite managers I've ever had. And he would say, if I ever said, I really just don't have enough time to do this sort of stuff, he would be like, no, you do. It's just not a priority.
Yep.
And I was like, that's true. And he got me a little bit out of the habit of, I wish I had more time, or I just can't seem to get around to, because it just isn't. It's not a priority. If it's not getting done, it's because it's not something I wanted to do enough.
That's really it. Because when you do want it enough, I find that the scariest thing right now is just figuring out, yeah, still what I want to be when I grow up. Like, I'm still trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, in school they made it seem like you would figure that out, and that's what you would do.
And then that would be your career for life. Isn't education's funny? I know that's a whole nother topic for another day, probably. But yeah, it like is. I don't know. They don't. I like kind of the independent spirit, but they don't really teach you that.
Yeah. I don't know how they could do that in a formal way. But have you ever been able to do a cartwheel?
A cartwheel? Well, I do my own sort of cartwheels, but I would not say that that's something that everybody should ever see, anybody should ever see.
I've never been able to do a cartwheel, and I want my kids to be able to, because I have this theory that if you learn while your center of gravity is a little bit lower to ground,
then it's not so hard.
It's not so hard. The fact that Chris Farley could do cartwheels
is pretty amazing, right? Like really good cartwheels.
Yes.
How did he learn that? That's so funny.
Because I can't imagine you taking a grown man, especially of his size, who has never done who had never done a cartwheel, and be like, "Hey, let me show you. It'll be fine. You won't hurt yourself. It'll be good." I can only think that you learn when you're small. So I want my kids, but they are scared to death of smashing their face on the ground. So
you know what? This is it. This is the fear. It's like metaphoric fear. If we can overcome these little fears and somehow like. You know, when a kid accomplishes some things, my oldest daughter, she's 8, but she's scared of everything at first until she does it. Like last summer, we decided, did you ever watch Seinfeld?
Yes.
Summer of George?
Yes.
Okay. So last year we decided Summer of Sophia, right?
Okay.
And so I explained to her, I'm like, in your Summer of Sophia is going to be the summer of first experiences. You're going to try things that scare you and you're going to do them. And you don't ever have to do them again if they're horrible, but you have to try a bunch of things once. So she did swimming. She flew on a plane. She, what else? She skateboarded. She tried guitar lessons. And she's still with that, which is great. But yeah, we just tried all these different things. No cartwheels, though. We'll have to do cartwheels.
I don't know. The fact that I don't know how to do one, I feel a bit of a hypocrite telling my kids, here, let me.
It's so
you
cool.
Need to learn how
I
to.
I just want you to do everything I couldn't do.
Exactly.
I'm the same
I'll
way
live through you.
With kids. It's handstands. Try handstands.
Handstands. We'll work on handstands. You can go up against the wall.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Jamie, for
thank
taking
you.
The time to chat with us.
Thanks so much. I've had fun.
And we have more episodes. This is our pilot, and we are so grateful for Jamie taking the time to and the patience as I'm kind of working out the format and stuff. But we have more episodes coming, so follow us on webfriends.io. And Jamie is on Twitter at JAIMEE twice. So you have to write Jamie.
Jamie, and it's a unique spelling, but if you find the little avatar with the fuzzy hat, you found the right one.
Yeah, what animal is that? It's like a raccoon
it's
looking
a little
thing.
Bear. Yeah, okay. I have no idea. It's a hat from Target.
All right, well, thanks, Jamie.
All right, thank you so much.
Hey, you stuck around till the end of the show. Thank you. I appreciate that. So you could probably tell from this episode that I'm going for something a little bit different. I'm going to be interviewing designers and developers who work on the web. And we're not going to talk too much about what they do. That's an important part, but I feel like there are plenty of podcasts that do that. To me, the important thing about this podcast and this new project is the friendships and the relationships that we make as web designers and web developers. We really could go and make money doing a lot of different kinds of things. We're very talented people for the most part. We like to solve problems. In fact, any problem that you put in front of a good designer or developer, there's the natural tendency to want to solve it. But as we continue to work in this industry over time, we realize that not only do we want a good project, but we want to work with good people. And that's what makes this industry so interesting to me and so exciting, is that we have some awesome people in the community. So the whole point of the show is we want to sit down and talk to them. We want to get to know them a little bit better so that you can recognize the awesomeness that you are a part of. So new episodes coming up soon. I've got Mark Johnson coming up next, and there's a whole first season that's all scheduled out. So if you go check out webfriends.io, you'll find the schedule of upcoming episodes and designers and developers that I'll be talking to. Also, I want to thank goodstuff.fm. It's a new broadcasting network that's being put together, and without their support, really couldn't make this podcast happen. In fact, they're helping us so that the podcast will be able to record it and broadcast it live. So every Friday at noon Pacific time, you'll be able to listen in live as recording the interview. And then shortly after, we'll release the regular podcast through the subscription. So if you can't make it, it's fine. You'll still be able to hear it. Before I go, also need to mention Cubie put together the music that I'm using for the intro and the outro. It's a song called Seahorse Dreams, and it's part of an album or an EP called Gas Powered, and it's all this Pendleton Ward-inspired music. So go check it out on SoundCloud, and I'll make sure to drop a link in the show notes as well. Thanks again for listening to the whole episode, and if you have any feedback, let me know. I'm on Twitter, webfriends.io. Thank you so much.